Hello.
Hey, so that didn't.
Shelly.
Yeah, hey.
The iPad didn't work. Sorry.
That's okay. We're live.
Hello.
You're listening.
Hello.
To Coffee Up This Way. We've got Kristen and Kelly here with me, Dana. And tonight's topic is going to be scarcity. But before that, I think we should listen to something very abrupt.
I mean, really, we could have just paused it after you and Kelly, because yeah. I'm not even on there yet.
I don't even know why. You sent a picture to Jeffrey, right?
I sent pictures to Jeffrey. We're still on show seven.
I know. Yeah. Like, how do we feel about week seven?
It's been like 7 weeks, and we're on week seven, and you know, it's cool.
It's glorious.
Eventually, I'll be on there.
We've been on week seven since February.
Yeah.
That's normal. That works.
So, let's see. I'm going to do a Reader's Digest of my past week. I worked, and I took apart a motorcycle and put it back together, and it still doesn't quite run right, but it's a little better. And then last night, I didn't sleep so good, so I've got sleepy eyes a little bit. And I might be irritable, but not too irritable, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, goodness. And I have loud puppies.
They have opinions.
How about you, Kelly? What have you been up to in the past week?
Let's see. Pissing off my 7-year-old because I cut his hair too short, and he hates me. So, poor kid. He asked for a short haircut, so
you did what he asked, and now he's mad at you.
I did, and then he saw his reflection, and he full on burst into tears.
Oh dear.
Oh my.
Yeah, and I'm like, I can't glue it back on, but it will grow. But that was of no consolation. So yeah, so I felt really, really bad. I'm like, okay, I promise I will never cut your hair that short again. So there was a little bit of trauma around that for sure. We are in the process of trying to add on a deck to the house, and that hasn't been without its own trials and tribulations as well. We rented an auger to dig the holes. It didn't work. Then it rained, like end of days kind of rain. So last week, I feel like, was a constant trial of, okay, here's what life's going to throw at you. How are you going to react to it? So I'm good. You know, but I'm just remembering I'm really not in control of anything.
That's cool.
Just observing.
One of the reasons that we are one of the dominating species on the planet is because of our ability to adapt to changing circumstance.
Are we really, though, the dominant species?
One of. I mean, we're the only part of the, like, animal biome that is responsible for remapping, like, weather patterns. I'd say that's pretty dominating.
That's only because we're killing our ecosystem.
Yeah, but nobody else can do that.
Makes us pretty dominant.
Yeah.
Really stupid.
Well, I didn't say it made us smart.
Hey, guess what we forgot to do?
What?
What's that?
Share the show link.
Oh!
Oh, no!
So literally no one is going to join us tonight.
Well, lucky for us, I don't, I'll figure out how to do that. And, yeah, so.
It's totally fine.
Kristen, you talk about things.
I'll talk about things. Well, I'm finally back. Had COVID after 2.5 years, and that sucked more than I thought it would. Though it could have been worse. I'm like, post, I don't know, almost 4 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and didn't realize how still exhausting I would feel, how exhausted I would feel. But that's fine.
How's COVID brain been? Because I can tell you, like, everyone in my, it ran through my office, and everyone's like,
it's a thing.
We have to stop apologizing to each other for what we don't remember we did or didn't do.
Yeah, it's a thing. I feel like I'm having to think of words and yeah, it's write everything down, make lists, think of, yeah, exactly. All of those things. We had our second annual Lou Gehrig Day, unofficial Lou Gehrig Day. Craig and I gave away another scholarship to a very deserving kid going to school.
So tell me about that. Like, what qualifies you as a candidate to win the scholarship?
So you have got to be affected by ALE. You're a parent, or you have to be living in a home with somebody who is affected by ALS.
Okay.
So a grandparent, a parent, if they're living in the home with you, and you're caretaking, part of caretaking with them, you are part of it. And the girl who got it this year, Jaden, she is kind of, her and her little brother are kind of part of the reasons why we started the scholarship. We met her and her mom and dad and her brother many years ago. After her dad was diagnosed with ALS, and we've just been friends with them ever since, and they're just an amazing, amazing family, and we always knew that automatically they were going to be recipients, and she graduated from high school, and she's a very worthy little contender, and she's an amazing kid, and she's going to do amazing things when she goes to school, so we're very excited for her. So we did that. And then tomorrow I'm going to get some therapy done. I'm very excited about. And my husband is listening to his computer very loudly, can you, so I apologize.
I was going to say, can you fill us in? What is entertaining Craig right now that we are enjoying
something of? I have no idea, but I am going to text him and tell him to turn it down a smidge.
I love it that in this era, we don't get up and leave the room. We just text the other person. We're like, hey, you're being a bit busy and loud right now.
Whatever happened to turning around and being like, hey, Craig, turn it down.
I love him, though. But yes, so that's what we're, yeah, that's what he loves to find comedy specials like on Netflix and stuff. He loves comedy. So he has, so knowing him is something funny that I may not necessarily find funny.
Which is why he's watching it alone.
Hey, now this is a plug for something that reminds me of my youth. This is in no way affiliated with us in any way, but I just recently discovered that Kids in the Hall has a brand new season that just came out on Prime, and it's fantastic. That's just my opinion, but it takes me back to being a teenager in the 90s and watching things I'm not supposed to while my mom isn't paying attention.
I never watched it. Did you, Kristen? Is he just that much younger than us? Or I don't...
No, it was from 1994,
I think. I was going to say, I remember it, but it's just been so... I think we were probably going into college. Or in college. Hey. Oh, see, the dogs are talking about it now. Now they want to have a whole discussion about it.
I remember. So speaking of the 90s, Jeffrey is not with us this evening because he's on his way back from the...
Atlanta.
Hotlanta, baby. Yeah, so...
How much trouble do you think he got into in Hotlanta?
I think that he was the babysitter, honestly.
Yeah, he really didn't. I talked to him on his way back because he's doing like a balls-to-the-wall drive home, 14 hours from
Atlanta. No sleep.
And no sleep and no food and all the things. So, but you know what? I did catch some of the footage. I loved it. Cat showed up. And by the way, Katrina Johnson looks amazing in green. Did you guys not catch?
She does look amazing in green. That's true.
Oh, where she's motorboating the green helmet.
Yeah.
I did catch that, yeah.
Kind of epic. So I got to chat with her a little bit last night about that. And I'm like, girl, she's like, I know, it's the blonde hair. But like, really, when you know your own strengths, she works it. Love her. Mm-hmm. So
she's
yeah.
Very wiggly. She wiggles a lot in her videos.
She does a great wiggle.
I didn't say it was bad. I was just not making note.
Yes. So observing the wiggle. So anyway, What were you going to throw at me?
Well, I was going to wrangle us around to maybe curving in towards tonight's topic of discussion.
Okay. Oh, Kristen, I love you.
Which is doggies. No, it is scarcity. As Kelly messaged me earlier, I was like, hey, what do you guys want to talk about? And Kelly said, I have this idea on the back burner for scarcity. And I feel like we can go down some real rabbit holes there. We can talk about resource scarcity and its effect on people growing up. We could go into social scarcity or emotional scarcity. There's so many topics. There's so many things. So we can talk about all of them. But maybe we should come up with a timeline. Let's talk about something from when we were kids that we found that we were scarce. It was scarce in our growing up environment, and how that is kind of evolved into what we deal with today with our own weird idiosyncrasies as a result.
Well, mm-hmm. I would love to take that one first.
Go to town.
I think you guys know, like, maybe I'm the anomaly. I think I had a really great childhood. And
I always thought that would make a great girl's name. Like, if you named a girl, I would want to name her Anomaly.
Anomaly or Scarcity?
Anomaly. It's beautiful.
Yes. But no, I had a really great childhood and experience with my parents and everything. But mom made the decision early on. She was going to be a stay-at-home mom. And so finances were scarce, for sure. And we always had absolutely enough of everything, emotional support, food on the table. But when it came to some of the other things, when you're comparing to the Joneses, or, and I felt this most going into those older, like when you cross over from adolescence into those middle years where you're more aware of what others have and you don't have. Mm-hmm. One of the best conversations I ever had with my dad was on the front porch of our house, and I really, really, really wanted a pair of Nike sneakers. Mm-hmm. And you do. I know you do.
It's heartwarming.
It is. And my dad sat next to me, and he's like, Kel, he goes, I brought home these sneakers for you. I hope you like them. And I don't know if you guys ever had a Woolworths in town. Do you remember Woolworths, Kristen?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We had something much worse. We had Nickels.
So he brought home these powder blue Velcro, full 80s style Velcro sneakers. And he's like, this is the best we can do right now. He goes, I would love to buy you the Nikes that you want. He goes, but right now, Dad can't afford to wear the Nikes. And so that means you can't either. But I really hope you understand that this is a gift from me, and I love you. And it's no reflection on how much I care about you, but this is what we can afford right now. And it was one of those moments in life that just stuck with me, is that, you know, we don't have to tie monetary value to things or what, you know, what everyone else has to have emotional support. So it's just one of those things I always remember, where someone was straight with me. You know, they didn't, mm-hmm. he didn't sugarcoat it. He was loving and kind in how he explained the story. But the fact of the matter is, this is what we can do right now, you know? And for me, that was probably the most important gift I ever received, was those Woolworths sneakers, you know?
Mm-hmm. That sounds nice. And it was.
See, yeah.
That's meaningful. I like that.
It is, but now I have a shoe hoarding problem.
So Kristen,
I had that problem.
Have you ever,
like, you know what I mean? Like, where it's the pendulum sways in the other direction, where you're like, okay, now I have my own money. And guess what? I buy shoes. I buy a lot of freaking shoes.
I've had that problem. No, I mean, I will say, in my younger days, I think I definitely had a lot of emotional and we had a lot of financial scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
My parents bought a business in 77 when I was a no, I'm sorry, 79, when I was 2 months old, that in the 80s almost went bankrupt. I remember my dad used to trade car payments from people for things.
Oh.
Like food and babysitting and like stuff. And my parents used to work Monday through Saturday, would take wedding pictures Fridays and Saturday nights. And then like our big treat would be like when they would bring home a piece of wedding cake. Mm-hmm. Like that would mm-hmm. be like the treat.
That is and a big treat, though.
Sundays, like we may be able to have a family day. Like our way of getting water was cleaning out gallon jugs and going to the spring, like on a hill. And that's how we got fresh water.
We have one of those in Port Byron.
Yeah. And emotional support, we just didn't have a lot of. My dad was not around a lot because he worked a lot. My parents were definitely kind of stay together for the kids. I don't think so much now in their older days, but very much so as while we were young and growing up. And my mother was not emotionally
available.
Available. She never really was. She and I hated each other until I was about 17. And it was, we were in the, I stood up for her when my parents were fighting. And I remember taking a slap from my father, from my mother. And my mother finding out that I was sexually abused and me finding out she was sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And from that point, us becoming like friends.
Right. You bonded over your own shared trauma.
But it wasn't until I was probably 17. But yeah. Until that point, there was zero emotional ties.
Yeah.
Between us. And
why do you think that was? Do you think she needed to protect you from who she was, or she was just spending so much emotional bandwidth everywhere else?
No, she was so emotionally scarred in her own life. Both of her parents were alcoholics, and she would come home and take care of her brother and her sister. She left her house at 17. My dad left the house at 18. My grandparents on my dad's side were very emotionally awful people. Just very racist, very mean, very both immigrants who, well, my dad's also an immigrant, but they were just not nice people. They weren't nice people. Though they worked for everything, and I will say that everybody in my life taught me the value of hard work and dedication and honesty and being that person. It also very much taught me to not be anything like anybody else in my family. Very much so. Because
so you're kind of the black sheep.
I'm so the black sheep.
Yeah. But in a good way, it sounds like.
So the black sheep. But I have had my mother, my brother was the miracle child. He is 4 years older than me, but he was the miracle child. My mother was supposed to go in for IVF like right before she found out she was pregnant with my brother. She had horrible postpartum depression with him and attempted shmoomicide, because you can't really say that word on YouTube. Three times after him with her postpartum. So she was just very emotionally spent. I mean, with me, she started smoking 4 days, I think 4 or 5 days after I was born while she was nursing me.
Nice.
because that's how she, her mother taught her how to deal with stress, and her mother was a NICU nurse, so she felt her mother knew best. So I was always a very sick kid. So though I learned some very valuable lessons as to how to take care of myself and my husband and know how to, you know, be steadfast and a strong individual, independent individual, I also learned very much who I did not want to be. Mm-hmm. So how about
but
you, Dane?
I think that's, you know, not to cut Dane off, but I think that's what a lot of people with a trauma story, it goes one way or the other. Either we repeat the patterns of what we personally experienced, or for some reason, and thank God some people in my life who I won't name to protect their identities, but people close to me who had suffered amazing trauma as children used it the same way that you did, Kristen, as the example of how they did not want their lives to be.
Yeah. And you know what? And to my mother's credit, she did not. I mean, my mother truly could have gone a different route, really could have gone a different route, but she
emotionally shut down, but she wasn't abusive.
No, she was never abusive towards us. I mean, she really did what she could to make sure. I will say my parents worked their asses off to make sure my brother and I could, you know, there was a roof over our head. We never knew, you know, we were the kids that did not know that there was issues. You know, we were smart enough to know that, you know, we kind of had to share a Happy Meal, but not that there wasn't food on the table, you know.
No, and I think that's a huge point that you bring up as well, is like, how much sharing do we do? Like, there's got to be a balance between what we tell our children so that they can accept the world they live in versus not burdening them with things that are adult issues, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a difference between, I just don't want to talk about that because it makes me uncomfortable, versus it's really just not appropriate to share with a child at that level. And I think today we're seeing the full spectrum of that. We're seeing the emotionally shut down. We don't talk about that because those aren't the things we don't talk about. And then we're seeing the whole... Yeah. On the other end, we're seeing that I'm just diarrhea of the mouth every day, sharing things with children on a level that is wholly inappropriate for them to process and steals their childhood from them.
Well, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at that. I mean, maybe you could be using your kids as like some kind of sort of listening therapy for yourself. I don't know. But the other end of it is, you know, life gets ugly. Like, things aren't great, and sometimes bad stuff happens, but I think it gives you a chance to kind of model an appropriate way to handle that for your kids. Like, yeah, I think it's okay to say to your kids, like, hey, this bad thing's happening.
Yes.
It's not something that you need to worry about. Mom and Dad will take care of it, but just know that it's hard for us too sometimes. I'm like,
Dana, you know that I have the utmost respect for how you and Maureen communicate with your kids about tough stuff. Like, I feel like you guys do it right. And I feel like Andy and I do as well, where we don't dismiss the reality as small as, like, I was joking earlier about Branson's haircut. You know, he was upset. I could have just told him, it's a fucking haircut, get over it, kid. But I didn't. Yeah. I gave him time to grieve something that was really important to him. And he came around on his own. I didn't have to, you know, cajole him or whatever. And I think there's a difference in that. It's the same thing with discussing difficult subjects. There's a way to introduce the topic and the conversation that is at their level so that they don't feel like you're hiding things from them, but you're also not, you're not transferring your burden onto your kids, right? So, that said, Dana, you're up.
Oh, well, I had kind of a transitory situation. Like, I started out like the golden child, like the only child. Well, I have half brothers and sisters, but I was so much younger that I may as well have been an only child. And when I was little, my dad made a lot of money. Like, he had his own business, and like, I could have anything I wanted. But I was always, I never really had, I guess it would be emotional neglect. I had a scarcity of like emotional connection. Like, they used to be like whenever there'd be a family function or we had to go someplace like a wedding, dress up Dana, isn't he cute? Put on a little show, like show everybody what a happy family we are. Mm-hmm. And then at home, it was just being left alone by myself. And
so for public, consumption, you were the idyllic child that we want to show off, but we're not actually going to invest in your emotional well-being or acknowledge you even exist.
Nope. Never really took me anywhere, did anything with me. Like it was pretty lonely. And
so you were a show horse.
Yeah. And then when I got older, like, I mean, there was other things, like, obviously, like, I think I've mentioned it before. I mean, there was abuse and it was ugly, but I always had everything I needed in terms of, like, physical needs and wants. Like, money was there. But then when my parents got divorced, I was, like, 10 or 11. Then all of it flip-flopped. Like, all of a sudden, I'm 11 years old, and I'm the man of the house. My mom's disabled. And just constantly sitting there on QVC talking about how she wishes she was dead. And now I'm cutting the grass and mowing, like, you know, doing the dishes, making food and stuff. And she's just watching TV. And
smoking cigarettes and making ham salad.
Yeah, a lot of cigarettes. So many cigarettes. Yeah, Kristen, you said your mom started smoking 4 days after you were born, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, my mom smoked all the way through pregnancy.
Me too.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, in my mom's defense, I mean, honestly.
3 packs a day.
No, but my mom and I have talked about this. She's like, literally, no one ever said to me, this is a bad idea. Nope. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you get a smoking room in the hospital.
Yes. I mean, like Kristen said, like, you trusted your care provider. She's like, no one ever said to me. I mean, my mom's biggest issue was with me. She gained so much weight. So I think she had a diet for 9 months afterwards that was like an apple and a can of tuna fish because vanity mattered. And you couldn't be walking around wearing that extra weight, you know?
So yeah, after my parents got divorced, it went from just like emotional scarcity to like resource scarcity. I mean, we're living on my mom's disability and social security check, so like $12,000 a year, and taking care of two people. And I was the one doing most of the work. Like, she could drive me places, but I mean, all the heavy lifting and stuff I kind of had to do. Like, there was nobody else that could do it, and so. Did that, and so I don't know. I guess probably the biggest thing it taught me is that life isn't fair, and you may not get what you need. You may not be able to get what you need, and it sucks. So I guess don't need it.
But one of the things I want to ask is, like, how does that show up today? Like, I mean, I have some very weird idiosyncrasies, like if we go back to the physical rather than the emotional things I can't run out of that. And part of it is having kids, like if my kids come to me and they're like, I don't have any underwear. I have my phone in my hand. I'm on the Amazon app ordering more underwear. Yes. I do laundry. What feels like 7 days a week. Right.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I can't let anybody run out of socks and underwear. I'm like, no, you have to have those. Like, I don't care if you turn your shirt inside out, but we have to have socks and underwear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I don't even, like, I went without for so long. Like, I would live on, like, Hungry Man TV dinners and, like, my mom's concoction. She was a terrible cook. Oh, my God. But, like, most of the time, I was just kind of making my own thing. Like, I used to make these weird things out of, like, tomato soup. I would, like, add macaroni and stuff. So I'm always, like, I can always MacGyver something out of whatever's in the pantry. I guess that's probably, like, the tool I found is, like, probably what happened to me as a result is I learned that what I need isn't important, and I don't need it, so just don't need it. And you can always
do what you want is not important.
Yeah, I was going to say what you need is important. What you want is not necessarily, maybe it's not necessarily important.
So I continued the neglect that my family started with me. Like, I just neglect myself, and it's fine because that's all I know. And then, but I mean, for like other things, like my idiosyncrasy stuff, like I never really worry about not having things. Like, I didn't have things and it was fine. So not having things is fine. Like, if we run out of milk, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'll go right to the store and get milk or eggs or bread. It's like, I don't know, eat something else. We'll find something. Come here. Let's go have ramen. I don't know. Like, yeah, I just, there's always an alternative. I always just, I guess I don't worry so much about like the resources anymore. Like, I just kind of adapt to whatever the situation is and make that work. And I'm okay with it.
How does that affect the people around you?
Oh, it's probably really frustrating because I bet you they get really like concerned about like, how come you don't pay attention to this? And how come like, we don't have that. We need this. It's like, well, we'll get it. It'll be fine. It's probably frustrating.
No, I'm just thinking about like the kids going to the cupboard and being like, my favorite oatmeal is not here. And I don't know what we have right now.
Let's have eggs. Have a yogurt. Have a granola bar. There's options. There's always something there. Yeah. May not be what you want, but it's what you need.
So, Kristen, kind of, yes. I have the same question for you, and probably more so, I guess I'm curious in light of everything that Craig has gone through, what are you absolutely afraid of not having on hand or available? Like, what's your scarcity fear around Craig?
Electricity.
Okay.
That would be my, likely my only one.
So his life support system is completely dependent on electric?
Yes.
Do you have a backup?
I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think of like, you know, because I think it's very, as a white woman, you know, as a, you know, lower middle class white woman who, you know, is able-bodied, I think it's very ableist and elitist for me to say like, you know, I have a scarcity mindset, blah, blah, blah. I need this, this, and that, and the other thing. So for me, I would say for Craig, electricity would probably be like the number one. Like the other day at work, we lost power and it went all the way down to our area. Like, because I only work like 2 miles from where we live. It did not hit our house because for some reason, our home is on the same
grid
as Walmart.
Oddly enough. Yeah, that'll never lose power.
So it like doesn't lose power. So, but his bed is an air mattress. It's not like an air mattress, like
you. Oh, like a Sleep Number kind of thing.
Not necessarily. It fluctuates the air, so he can't ever get a pressure sore. Oh,
well, that sounds nice.
So, it's kind of like sleeping on a cloud.
Right, but, so it circulates air so that he doesn't get bed sores and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, but if we ever lose power, it deflates to the bed frame.
Ew.
Which we have lost power and that has happened. His vent is also electricity. It has a 30-minute battery backup
which
in and of
nothing.
Itself.
Yeah, but that's like
no and time. Then we have like 4 lithium batteries that last give or take 4 hours each. So, I mean, if we got him in his wheelchair, he would be good for like 16 hours, like in his wheelchair, which would give us enough time to like get him to a hospital or get him to somewhere else that would hopefully be able to, you know, take effectively care for him. If our power would not come back on. So I think for us, that would be, for me, that would be my biggest fear is electricity for him. For myself, I don't know that, you know, I think, you know, I'm not rich, but I have everything like I need. I have enough money to get the things that squeaky toys for my dogs. Sorry.
And they're grateful.
They're grateful. You know, I can get the things most of the time that I want. I mean, not necessarily like uberly expensive things, but I have an iPhone. I'm on a laptop. I can get a coffee, you know.
And you work at a coffee shop.
I work at a coffee shop. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think for myself, I'm like, you know, I'm incredibly blessed that given the fact that the love of my life was given a diagnosis of a terminal illness 14 years ago that should have been 2 to 5 years, according to all this scientific research, I'm lucky as fuck. Mm-hmm. And I really can't be anything but grateful for it. And I keep that mindset every day because, absolutely. I mean, we have been through it with this disease, mm-hmm. through it, like lived paycheck to paycheck. We still live paycheck to paycheck. We don't have a lot of money. But again, I mean, I don't live in a food desert. I don't, you know, I can go to Trader Joe's. I can go to a grocery store. I can afford the $5 of gas, which, by the way, is not the most expensive in the world. People stop freaking out. You know, I'm healthy. You know, my dogs are healthy. I have friends that are healthy. You know, I can do this. I feel really incredibly grateful that at 45, I have this life and I have some really special friends that I can do this with that, I'm getting choked up that, I don't know, last October, I wasn't in that mindset. So no, I feel really grateful.
You but you know what? You just walked us into exactly what I wanted to talk about, which is the other side of scarcity is gratitude.
Yeah.
Abundance?
Yeah, no, abundance. Gratitude. It's not...
Well, it is an abundance. A mindset is the opposite of a scarcity mindset is an abundance mindset.
It is.
It's to change your attitude to an abundance mindset. But
it is. I but also the only think way to do that is through gratitude, in my mind.
Yeah, because...
I could be wrong.
But no, I agree with you, because I think there's a bad kind of... Bad... See, this is COVID brain. Thank
bad
you.
Shit crazy.
No. What Kelly
bad
said.
Connotation.
With abundance. Yes. Like, because, you know, you think it's an abundance greed. Of something.
Greed.
Yeah, greed. Thank you.
But it's not.
It but it's
be,
not.
It's tied to gratitude.
Yeah, it's just being incredibly grateful for, like, the little things that I have. I remember I did a lot of creative writing. Mr. Durham, God bless his soul.
Oh, Mr. Durham.
God bless his soul. I did a lot of creative writing in our AP English, and mm-hmm. I found this one saying that was, for the love of my life, I would live on a blade of grass. And it's true. I mean, I would be happy living in a cardboard box on a blade of grass with Craig, and I would be fine. I'd go flip a hamburger. I would do whatever I needed to do to keep a roof over my head and Craig's head and keep him home with me and safe. It wouldn't matter. I would yes. do it. And I'd be fine doing it.
Yeah.
So.
No, and I think the three of us share that. I mean, quite honestly.
No, definitely.
I was just about to agree with it, too. Like, I've always said that, like, it doesn't matter what house I'm living in or what car I'm driving or if I even have any of those things. Like, the most important things to me is always like that emotional connection, like where you just like feel like it'll be okay because I've got that person, you know, like I've always wanted that. Like, that's always been the thing that I've always been like, no, you don't need all these physical things. You don't need to like destroy your like friends to get the car or whatever. Like, It comes down to like, I've got a little pod and they care about me and that feels good. That's all I need.
Yeah. And it's taken, I mean, and truly it's taken me 45 years to find that little pod. And within those 45 years, I mean, just recently lots of that pod is broken off and I'm goodbye. Bye-bye. I'm fine with that pod breaking off. You know, I'm very grateful for the people that I have in my life as small as my
circle
pod
is.
Yeah, my circle is. I don't know how many people are on my Facebook page. I have no freaking clue.
That's the point. You don't need to count it by that. You count it by the people that you know. If if you called any one of us and said, I'm here, right?
Yeah.
I need that, like, obviously we show up, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And even if it's just a text message, you know, whatever. I mean, sometimes it's all any of us. Yeah. Sometimes it's all any of us need at that moment, you know. Dana, do I see a slight smile on your face this evening, even though you said you were so tired?
I am very tired. No, it's just, it's nice. Like, I don't know. It's nice just hearing people reiterate stuff that I kind of think in my head, you know?
Oh, I'm getting all the feels today. Getting my feels today.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, I think about how I can best show up for the people in my life. And it, mm-hmm. it comes down to that, Kristen. It comes down to, let me just be there for you. Let mm-hmm. me let you know I see you, mm-hmm. and yeah. I love you, and I'm there for you. You know,
yeah.
I think Dana and I, we've had the same conversation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I do, and I think sometimes people kind of might look at it like I'm playing a victim role or something, but it's not what it's about for me. Like when I'm going through something hard, I don't have a problem expressing it and talking about it because it gives me insight into the people around me and mm-hmm. how they react to it. Like if I'm having a difficult time with something, like or an emotional problem of some kind, and I talk about it with somebody, I can tell if they're engaged and if they actually care about it or if they're not. And they can see if I feel bad, and they will genuinely try to either comfort me or they'll distance themselves from me, be like, well, I just don't want to be in that drama. Like, and that's fair. I mean, I'm not going to judge somebody for that, but I also know that when I have a friend that needs me for a shoulder or like needs help doing something manually, like they'll reach out to me. If I need to talk about something, I can talk to them. Like it's not even like a system of exchange. It's more like a system of like acknowledging that, like, it's almost like you see a little bit of yourself in, like, you know that you can rely on this person because they're a lot like you, and well, that person knows that they can rely on you because you're a lot like them. And it's
basically
it's have that. Yeah.
We're gonna fill each other's cup regardless mm-hmm. of what we get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, for me, that's how I look at it, is like, what can I do to fill your cup? How can I be there to support you? I'm not keeping score. I don't care what happens on the other side of it. Like, I'm not going, geez, I was there for you. Why aren't you there for me? Like, there's never,
yep.
Was it, you guys were talking about last week, Dana, in the show that Christian and I missed about transactional things.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I cannot be transactional. I don't know how to, that's not in my fiber. Yeah.
It feels yucky, but I think it's sometimes we get that way and we don't even realize it. Like when I was talking about like interactions with people and setting boundaries, and there's almost a transactional element to that. Like when somebody oversteps your boundaries enough times, you don't mean to, but you eventually start keeping score. You're like, wow, that hurt. And then, oh, that happened again, and they're still hurting me. And then, oh, here it is again. They're still hurting me. They just don't get it. I thought that we talked about this. I thought we had an understanding. And then, I mean, there's always going to be some level of scorekeeping. You have to. You have to at some point be like, wow, this person just keeps hurting me over and over again. Like,
yeah, that's true. I mean, that's very true. I mean, and that's how I ended up cutting somebody out of my life in January. I mean, because those boundaries just kept getting.
But I don't think that's scorekeeping. I think that's just being.
Oh, no. Yeah,
I think that's different.
No, not scorekeeping, but I mean, I
you have
see.
To have emotional awareness around the people who don't respect your boundaries.
Yeah,
and that's different.
I think you're talking about those transactional relationships where somebody will do a crap thing because they know the consequences won't be that bad and they can do something easy to make it up to the person. And
yes.
The feelings don't even come in. It's always about like, oh, well, I'm going to buy these shoes even though I know I'm not supposed to spend the money right now. And it'll be fine because I'll just make him dinner and he'll be mad for a minute. And like, it doesn't, there's no, depth there. It's just a series of transactions. Like, and then he knows that he'll get something out of it, and I get something out of it, and it's fine. Like, there's no, it feels yucky.
Yeah, no, that's manipulation in its grossest form. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not cool with that. But, I mean, a lot of people, I'd say like 50% of the people that you know, though, the relationships kind of start out that way, or a lot of them are that way just in general because, you know, like, I get along with a lot of different people, but there's some people I'll distance myself with because I get a feeling right off the bat that, like, oh, they really, they're like, core isn't really in line with what I'm about, and I just don't think that's going to feel good. And I will distance myself there. But like for the acquaintance style friends, I think a lot of our interactions are based off of like obligation because of transactions. Like, oh, I need to hang out with this person because I haven't hung out with them in a long time. Not because like I feel guilty I didn't hang out. I'm obligated to hang out with them. It's instead of, well, I'd like to hang out with this person. I haven't seen them in a long time and I miss them. You know, that's it's a big difference.
Yeah, of course. Especially, you know, now that we haven't seen people in so many years, you know, in so many years, it's just crazy to say that, which is mind boggling to me to say.
Yeah.
Especially now that we've all been through COVID in the last few weeks.
I read an interesting statistic that these like Zoom style platforms, like your conference style platforms and video calls, they've done more to help mitigate global warming than all the electric cars ever built since the beginning of electric cars, because people don't have to drive to see each other.
Yeah.
And like that's for work commutes and stuff, it's kind of amazing.
That is pretty amazing. I mean, you got to think of how much pollution was saved from the earth in the first year of COVID.
Yeah.
And that's pretty, I didn't even think about that.
It was, but it's also the reason why now gas prices are what they are, which I'm not inviting that conversation. I'm just saying it's like people don't understand that you can't have an immediate response to everything. You know, I mean, I was reading an article earlier today that everybody wants to blame it on this one thing or that one thing. It's like, no, I mean, like COVID struck a serious blow to our energy supply because we did start living differently.
But and I hate Joe Biden, so I'm going to blame him.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, are there things that this administration is doing because they're trying to wean us off of? For sure. This is in no defense of people trying to make mad money off of the current situation, but the reality is, if you're going to invest in something right now, I understand why oil producers are hesitant to just start drilling new wells and doing this and doing that, because 2 years ago, they couldn't sell oil to anyone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep. And it just went to waste.
It did. And they're like, well, okay, so I understand the world needs it now, but how long is that going to last? Yeah. And how much are we going to spend on drilling for new oil, not knowing if it's going to be used and for how long?
And that brings us to our next part of the topic, is scarcity of resources.
Yes. So how do we plan on, how are we going to brace ourselves for this recession?
Yeah, because we're going to have issues.
We are. I mean, I don't know how true it is. I was, you know, scrolling through my Facebook feed that talked about, for a trucker, out of his pocket, it's his or her pocket, it's like $17,000 a week to keep a diesel truck running and supplying goods.
Mmm. Delightful. Yeah. No, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that in the supply chain. But, I mean, we're going to have all sorts of, like, the scarcity of, I mean, right now we're starting to see the scarcity of fuel, but, like,
fuel runs everything.
Yep. But there's lots of stuff. The whole supply chain we have scarcity of, like scarcity of like new and used cars, scarcity of computer chips, scarcity of batteries and technology items. I mean, shoot, at this point, like scarcity of food. We're going to have all sorts, like a lot of our basic needs as humans are going to get tougher to come by. Like, See, that's where, like, I feel like a superhero, because I'm just like, I'll figure something out. It'll be fine. I have that from being a kid. I'm like, it doesn't matter how little we have. I've had nothing, and figure out a way.
No, I know. I mean, it kind of, no, I agree. But it also had me thinking about how maybe I need to build the greenhouse in the yard so that, you know, and then I'm like, well, then I have to research how to have a steady supply. If we go through X number of tomatoes a week and X number of peppers and this and that, like,
oh, you'll make yourself crazy.
I was going to say, there's great YouTube videos, though, about, like, preservation of food and stuff.
I know, but where do I have the bandwidth? I work 3 jobs right now.
Oh, nobody has the bandwidth for that stuff. I mean, it's just no, my but is entertainment that on YouTube.
But is that what we're going to need to do?
No, that's what I mean when I say, in my opinion, for me as a white woman, that... And even though I would consider us as, you know, and myself probably lower middle class, but still middle class, that we have the ability to always go somewhere and get something.
Until we don't.
99% of the time, get something.
Remember, how many times have you gone to buy toilet paper? Remember at the beginning of COVID?
Yes. What if that happens to all of the things that we...
Yeah.
I just don't ever... I guess because of where I live, and I live more in a cityscape. I don't live in a city, but I certainly don't live like where Kelly and I grew up in the country.
Mm-hmm. Which is where I live now, but more rural, if you can believe it. More rural.
I live pretty much in a cityscape that... I mean, thinking about it right now, I live near 4, 5, 7 different grocery stores within...
But what if they can't get their food?
There'll be something on the shelf. I can do something with something. Mm-hmm. If something can nourish my body, I can have something. I don't live in a red zone in a city that has a McDonald's and a corner store and a Dollar General that has nothing but high saturated fat crap and sugar. I don't have that issue.
But I'm on the opposite. Dana and I live in a land where the earth is everything, right? How much of a premium is every acre of farmland right now, Dana? Like, it is.
Yeah. I mean, average is like $5,000 an acre. And yes. I remember, like, it used to be, and that's just farmland. That's not even, like, buying a residential lot. Like, you looked at, like, some of these things, like, but... Where we are, there's so many opportunities for money. We are for food. Like, we go to an apple orchard. There's so many apple orchards. We have apples. There's all these dairy farms. We could have cows. Oh, there's always meat. So, like, even if society falls all apart, I'm going to still eat. All right.
But we have to be able to find access to them because we're not their buyers right now. Well,
at a certain point, the buyers drop off the table and it becomes hunters.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's farmland all around me. They're not selling to me and you, is my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even, like, are the farmers that are around us sell to individuals? Mm-hmm.
They are, but here's the other thing, Kristen. Right now, farmers can't afford, or they're reaching the point where they can't afford to put the diesel in their vehicles to even harvest crops.
I get it.
Now, lucky for us, the majority of the crops that the United States produces is corn. And we don't fucking need corn. We don't need corn.
No, we're trying to put it in our fucking gas tanks.
So, if we could stop farming corn and let those farmers save the gas, then that's great. But, like, the rest of the stuff we need. And most of it gets imported. You know, like, a lot of it's going to come, like, shipping style from South America. Or
we have migrant workers that do a lot of the work for cents on the dollar.
It's true. And they manage to live. They have no money. They don't have health care. They're doing it. We can do it.
For cents on the dollar, manual labor, hot sun.
Yeah, but we're saying we three can do it. Most people can't.
Mm-hmm. There's gonna be some fan being hit with some poop.
I mean, I think people need to adjust their reality. I mean, I think people, I mean, this is, and I say this, and I, this is the way I come at this. And I mean, again, this is probably a very elitist attitude, and an elitist attitude in a different respect, because I come at this with people in my mind when I was getting bitched at by people because they couldn't have a can of Coke. And I'm thinking to myself, my husband has a terminal illness at home and you're bitching at me about not having a can of Coke on a fucking airplane. Mm-hmm. And you're screaming at me about a fucking can of Coke. Excuse my language. I'm like on the tip jar today. Or at the coffee shop I work at and we ran out of breakfast sandwiches. Or last week when we ran out of power and people are trying to break in the door and not understanding the concept that there's a sign on the door that we don't have power and they can't get their coffee and they are pissed. I mean, they are right, calling the coffee. Store pissed.
Over coffee.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like people are willing. You got to think about this. These are the same people that are blaming Biden for the price of gas. Complaining all these stories about this, that, and the other, you know, gun rights, this X, Y, and Z, but they are going to pay $8 for a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So where do your priorities lie? I don't feel bad for those people. I do not feel bad for those people. So if I can figure it out, You need to get off your high horse. You need to get off your crap ass attitude.
Well, and I feel figure bad for their mental welfare that they're not seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, even high horses aside, I mean, there's people that just don't know how to provide for themselves. I mean, you see it all the time. Like, you see, like, people getting evicted from their apartments, and they don't pay their bills, and they don't have anywhere to go, and now they're homeless. But right up until they were evicted, they had 50 PlayStation games, they had a big screen TV, they had all this stuff that I'm like, I don't feel like you needed that. You could have probably used that to pay a bill. You know?
My brother and my sister-in-law, I mean, I think three times they filed the bankruptcy, but they had every brand new thing.
Right, exactly. Where are and your it was priorities?
Like, dudes, like what? I mean, I cannot tell you the amount of bills. Mm-hmm. Craig and I paid when the kids were younger.
Yeah.
And it was like, why don't you have hot water? Why don't you have electricity? You have a baby. You have babies. Like, and I would have to call Craig and be like, hey, can I pay their water bill? Can I pay their electricity bill? Can I pay? And they're living in a $400,000 house and we're living in this little teeny,
$100,000. I just don't get people. Like, I look at, and that's another thing, but just even talk, like, I don't know, we've got to kind of wrap it up here soon, but like talking about scarcity, like you've got people that don't even realize what scarcity is because they just don't understand the concept of like providing for themselves.
They have no idea what it's like to have true scarcity of an item.
Even when they've had it, though, they don't recognize it. I think that's the crazy thing. There's so many people who have scarcity in their lives. They can't attach meaning to it. They don't understand. Like you guys said, well, I have to have the, 70-inch television. I have to have the 40 PlayStation games for my kids because that's an essential. That's a necessity. What? How did we get there?
Yeah. How about we go and spend $3 on a book instead and we'll pay a bill?
Or we'll go for a walk. I know it sounds, like you said, white woman issues, like, being moralistic or whatever and judging other people, but at some point you're gonna have to make a decision.
Yeah, like I remember being a kid, like when I was had everything in the world, like that was great. I mean, it entertained me, but it didn't really make me happy. And then when it was all taken away, I wasn't any more sad. Like I would do things for free. I would go ride my bike. I would go hang out with friends. I would go play with a stick. I would play with a rock.
We didn't have any of those things.
I wasn't miserable. No, it was the same.
But that's the perfect topic to round up on as we close out the hour is boredom. Boredom is healthy.
Mm-hmm. It's what causes you to be more creative.
It is, but it's what everyone is so afraid of. We keep, and I know I've been guilty of it at times as well, but, you know, when your kids come to you and say, oh, I'm so bored, and I'm like, oh, I'm really glad to hear that, because out of boredom comes creativity and solutions.
Great, you're going to think of something fun to do.
Right, let somebody, mm-hmm. but let's transfer that thought to grown-ass adults.
Mm-hmm.
Take your phone away from you for a minute. Take your TV, take your this, and sit down and realize, what are you going to do when things aren't there for you?
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes it's nice to just sit. Like, just put your phone down and just look around and enjoy the sounds and just enjoy the quiet and enjoy a peaceful moment. And
Sometimes it's just good for the soul. Yeah. You need to go outside and ground with the earth.
That doesn't cost anything.
No. Our indigenous brothers and sisters know what they're talking about when they say grind with the earth and let the
I only grind with the earth if she gives consent first.
Ground.
So I'll leave you guys with this, and I will butcher this, but it was something I saw on Facebook, of course. But it was about basically saying it's okay to have boredom and to have scarcity and to let go of everything. And then just the person who is the most busy is the person the most in need of grounding with the earth. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, you know, I think the message was you should spend X number of minutes a day connecting with the earth. And if you're busy, it should be 10 times more than that. Like, mm-hmm. but we don't make that a priority. I know I don't. And I should.
Oh, yeah. The people that need it the most say they don't have time to do it the most.
Right. But I think we're all doing that. Just mm-hmm. staying busy, running, chasing, doing.
Oh, yeah. Know. Well, I think that we've had a lovely divulgence into our topic for the evening. How do you guys feel about it?
No, I think it was cathartic. I don't know if the rest of the world will ever see this or... weigh in on it.
I never figured out how to share this episode, so I guess I'll just have to watch it in the archive.
We'll figure it out somehow.
Oh, well, we are live. I don't know. A couple of people have been kicking in here and there. It's probably Jeffrey.
Jeffrey!
What the F are they doing? Oh my gosh, right. They've ruined our show. But anyway, we love you all, and thank you. And Dana,